Phil Ford is the author of Dig, Sound and Music in Hip Culture. He takes the reader on a tour of the cutting-edge world of jazz musicians, beat writers, and style arbiters who make up what it is to be hip. Ford is a professor of musicology at Indiana University's Jacobs School of Music. His interests range far beyond the narrow view of field of creating rhythmic harmonic sounds that are pleasing and not only to the human ear. Music ties countless disciplines together. Now he's working on a book to describe the magical thinking and how it relates to music and the greater world. He joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest in the studio today, Phil Ford. He's a blogger, an author, and a professor of musicology over at the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. Thanks for being on the show, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Phil knows what is hip.
No, I know what people thought was hip like 70 years ago.
So what makes you an expert on this hipness?
The cynical answer would be because I wrote a book. The question was never what is hip, but I started off when I was going to work, and this is in the mid-late 90s, and I was living in Minneapolis, and I saw this kid with a goatee, and I started thinking, like, what is it about the goatee? That is part of the permanent rotation of styles. And, I mean, if you go back to the 50s and you look at all the kind of beatnik, beatsploitation, like the humor around the beat generation, you know, beats are always portrayed as having, like, a little goatee, right?
Right.
And goatee and sunglasses. And so I just started thinking, like, okay, so being a hip guy is supposed to be, like, you've got some kind of ineffable coolness. There's something unique. It's just you. And yet, we'd see people who clearly were not just expressing some kind of uniqueness. They're expressing a code of uniqueness.
A like, uniform.
Yeah, sort of. But with special rules, and it's really complicated. And as I started thinking it through, realizing how complicated it was, and also, you know, was relevant to the work I was doing at that time as a graduate student in musicology, that music seems to be implicated in this, because every musical subculture seems to have its own kind of hip style associated with it, or to put another way, every hip subculture seems to be like really involved in some kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you can easily sort of say, like, okay, this is hip and this isn't. Although people have been publishing articles in newspapers since the 1940s saying what's hip and what's unhip. And what occurred to me was that I didn't want to ask that question. What I was interested in is thinking about hipness as an aesthetic, an idea of what is beautiful and what is meaningful and what is true in works of art, in pieces of music particularly, but also in individual human selves that are being conceived as works of art. That a lot of what hipness has meant over the decades is people reinventing themselves almost as if they're a character in a play. It has to do with a certain idea of the self, and a self in modern society, where you think of social existence as being like essentially, inherently unfree. And the job of the hipster is to act or not act, but to fashion him or herself in such a way as to resist that pervasive unfreedom. So how do you write about that which exceeds written expression? In a sense, that's like a koan or an unsolvable riddle.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't solve it, and I don't think anybody can, at least I can write about how generations of writers and musicians, especially writers, spend a lot of time talking about people like Norman Mailer and the Beats in this book, how those writers tackled that question.
Like Richard Feynman, I like to get to first questions. What is musicology?
It is a word that I don't much care for. I always think musicology is the most pretentious possible name we could have given our line of work.
No kidding.
I prefer to call it just saying music history because, you know, art historians don't call themselves artologists. So musicology can cover the waterfront. It can be a lot of different things, but I suppose I would say in a very general way, it's the academic rather than performance study of music. Or for a lot of people, it's the academic as well as performance study of music. A lot of us are performers or at least semi-lapsed performers. Since publishing the book, I've also been working on a series of essays that I'm planning on putting together into a book at some point that all deal with aspects of this world of pattern recognition, this way of encountering the world in a kind of way that it privileges the individual experience. And the way that manifests is in thinking a lot, particularly about magical styles of thinking. Magic as in occult magic, as opposed to the sawing ladies in half kind of magic.
Yeah.
You know, magical thinking isn't usually a compliment, right? There's that Joan Didion book, The Year of Magic,
My Year of Magical Thinking,
which is, I think, implying, you know, magical thinking being this sort of like this weak and childish desire to imagine true what you wish to be true.
Often ascribed to women.
Yes.
Women's intuition.
That's right. It is very often gendered, and very often this highly cognitive style is considered more distinguished, more respectable, but also, I think, more manly and less disgracefully womanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book that I'm working on is actually tentatively titled Lilith and Adam. I think I need a good subtitle, maybe Lilith and Adam, a love story. There's an apocryphal story, the idea that Adam actually had a first wife before Eve named Lilith. Lilith left, and Eve is actually the second wife of Adam. And one day I started trying to put into words these different modes of functioning. These different cognitive modes can be frustratingly abstract. And so one day somebody had asked me to write a talk to give at a music festival, a new music festival. And I was trying to put in words the difference in a kind of a more magical style of thinking, as opposed to the more cognitive and rationalist style of thinking.
Aristotelian way of looking at things, perhaps.
Yeah. The Platonic Aristotelian distinction is an interesting one to bring into this. Yeah. And I was trying to think of what's a really concrete way to break this down? And I started writing a story about Adam and his first wife, Lilith, and thinking of them as characters who personify these different ways of thinking. And the book started to take shape from there. And what interests me is the interplay between these different modes in music and musical culture and how it plays across a variety of different musical contexts.
Phil Ford knows that music is much more than notes on a piece of paper or sounds that are hitting your ear. He talks about that at Indiana University. He's a professor of musicology there, also a blogger and an author. Phil, thanks so much for being on Big Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.